Stellen, die Fälle Mathe, Göttliche Gerechtigkeit, Canada, Foreign Services to the Department of Mutual Veterans.
Afternoon, my name is Long Gordon Lai, PCG responsible for veterans empowerment and faithful elimination.
Bilal Mutsi, Head of Communication Team.
Good morning, members. I'm Nandi Bantwalunga from the NCCQ.
Thank you very much. Just to remind you, the gentleman at the far end of the table is Honorable Menier, followed by Honorable Osel, followed by Honorable Runevalt, followed by Honorable Twango, then Honorable Ngabadeli, Honorable Mabeda, Honorable Mlambo, Honorable Mazia, Honorable Nana, myself, the chair, Honorable Bowie. You're sitting on the wrong side.
I don't
want to lose the common touch.
No.
Honorable members, let's go get into our business straight away. Did you? When you introduced yourself as a speaker, you nearly confused honorable member. Right. Can you give us your presentation, and then we'll take it up from here.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable member. As they're distributing the presentation and loading onto the screen, just to indicate that as was scheduled, we were to appear last week side by side with the Department of Defense, but of course, due to time constraints, we're only appearing today. We're actually relieved that we are appearing today dedicatedly as the Department of Military Defense so that we can have sufficient time to go through our annual performance plan. Now, before we get into the presentation, just to outline the context of this annual performance plan as well as the budget and the background. Just by way of information to indicate to the committee that when we started operations in our first financial year in 2010 and 11, our budget was set at 20 million only, and that was a budget for just setting up the department with zero for benefits to the community of military veterans. Fast track to the next financial year, which was 2011-2012, we had an increase to 45 million. Even with that, there was no allocation for benefits. But then it was on that basis that we were able to begin to gradually populate the department with the personnel from outside. And then, of course, the last financial year, with an increase to 101 million. Also there, even though there was zero allocation benefits, in a modest way, we started to then see what best and quickest interventions we could put in place to alleviate the burden of a community of military veterans. This financial year that is under consideration and against which we are speaking on this annual performance plan, sees an increase, significant increase in whatever the national treasury is allocated, that is to 351 million. Now, within which there is a specific dedicated budget allocated for the delivery of services and benefits to military veterans. And out of that 351 million, 300 million of that dedicated towards that. So it's the first time that there is now a dedicated budget to benefits. And of course, this comes also against the background of the legislation that you passed, the Military Veterans Act in 2011. Now, notwithstanding the increase that National Treasury has given for this financial year, there is still a delivery gap in terms of what is real and what we asked for and what we got. So that means that we had to cut our slots to fit our size in terms of some of the targets that we projected. And now, since the Act was promulgated in 2011, we sought to establish the department whilst at the same time seeking to deliver to military veterans, all in a limited or modest manner. And certain areas are still underway which we have to deliver on with respect to what the Act instructs us to do, in particular the governance structures and mechanisms that the Act sets out, be it the different councils or boards, or the establishing the umbrella associations, as well as the whole raft of other responsibilities that are imposed on us by the Act. So in presenting this annual performance plan, the department wishes to highlight that it must be read together with the actual booklet, which is the annual performance plan. The presentation that seeks to highlight some of the areas in line with the full APP, especially Appendix A, which details all the performance indicators. And so the presentation, when it comes to indicators, will focus only on selected performance indicators, as well as stick to what is the estimate of national expenditure by national treasurer. Our approach to deliver, even as we start this year having an allocated budget, will be a progressive one. That is, safe, progressive realization of the rights and privileges to ministers of veterans. And this is, of course, will link with, at the same time, establishing the necessary structures, processes, and systems of the department. That said, Chairperson, the aim of our presentation is just to briefly highlight the outlook of our APP for this 2013, as well as the strategic policy information. And we're doing that against the background of the regulatory requirements as set out by National Treasury, as well as the tabling and planning of strategic budgeting instruments. Our layout speaks to four main areas: strategic overview, budget, 2013 budget MTF estimates, program and sub-program plans, as well as links to our plans. And our mandate, as you already know from the legislation and the policy framework, is that which requires us to provide a national policy and standards on socio-economic support to military veterans and to their dependents, as well as benefits and entitlements, so as to help realize a dignified, unified, and empowered, self-sufficient community of military veterans. And of course, you already are aware of our vision, which is a dignified and empowered, self-sufficient military veterans community, and whose mission is to facilitate, deliver, and coordinate all activities of and to military veterans seeking to also entrench their restoration of their dignity and appreciate the contributions that they made to nation building. Part of it also will deal with the strategy map, which speaks to the outcomes as within the medium-term strategic framework of government and what relevance each outcome has for the Department of Military Veterans and what the Department of Military Veterans does with respect to that. But then to move on to specifically highlight the executive authority's priorities, they're on slide number 9, which are priority 1, to ensure a fully functional Department of Military Veterans, which has its own independent vote, structures and systems, that we are working on towards, so that by the next financial year, we should hopefully have our own standalone independent budget vote. In terms of systems, we are already fairly advanced in establishing our own independent system as a Department of Military Veterans, separate from the Department of Defense. Priority 2 then speaks to providing immediate social relief of distress to the most vulnerable of military veterans, and then within that, acknowledging the reality of destitute military veterans and the need for prioritization of those military veterans. And then also providing comprehensive support services to military veterans and to their dependents in all the areas of benefit as spelled out in the Military Veterans Act, specifically Section 5 of that Act. Priority 4, promoting empowerment programs for and of military veterans. And this year we are aiming that we will aggressively pursue the widening of access to economic participation to military veterans entailing utilizing for preferential procurement mechanisms with the DMV and other social partners, operationalizing the special purpose vehicle with which we are already in discussions with the National Treasury so that we act within the National Finance Regulatory Framework, and then facilitating employment placement as well as others on business opportunities. Those are all lifted from what the Act says, and this is just now to see how we are now operationalizing that within this 2013-14 financial year. Priority 5, being on the promoting heritage of military veterans and also memorializing and honoring military veterans. And then 6, maintaining a credible and secure national military veterans database. This speaks to what the Act also imposes as a responsibility on the Department of Military Veterans, that the Department of Military Veterans is and shall remain the custodian of the National Military Veterans Database. And then also lastly, implementing a high-impact communication and marketing strategies and plans with respect to military veterans, outreach programs, and activities linked to delivery to military veterans. So our focus will be speaking to our contribution to the MTSF outcomes, our contribution to the job creation agenda of government, our contribution to the forecast implementation, that is the Forum of South African Digis, and then also our modest contribution to youth development initiatives, and then ensuring a sustained mandate, including the executive and within the context of the executive authority priorities. Now, with respect to the MTSF priorities, I'll quickly go through them. And in all the outcomes, the MTSF priority, better what is the government outcome and what is our contribution as the DMV within that. On speeding up economic growth and transforming the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods, outcome 1 seeks to improve quality basic education within the context of that priority. And for us as the DMV, our contribution will be to ensure that deserving military veterans and their dependents have access to education support, and that eligible military veterans are enrolled within a different program, be it ABET, FETs, or the CTAS, in order to develop their skills. And of course, this is also to the priorities that we have within the DMV, which is that comprehensive support services to military veterans and their dependents. And then furthermore, priority strengthening skills and human resource base, and also improving the health profile of society, as government outcome, a long and healthy life for all South Africans. For the DMV, we see us achieving that by providing health care and wellness support to deserving military veterans, and as our priority lift from what has already been indicated, comprehensive support services to military veterans. And within that as well, acquiring a health care and wellness center and access to health support. And then on the medium-term strategic framework, priority of intensifying the fight against crime and corruption, the outcome in the government outcomes, all people in South Africa are and should face. For us, how we contribute would be to ensure that there is no fraud and corruption within the DMV and in allocation of benefits to deserving military veterans. And in that regard, we'll ensure that all responsible officials understand the consequences. And we are in the process of concluding an anti-fraud and an anti-criminality strategy. On the speeding up economic growth and transformation, outcome 4 speaks to decent employment through inclusive economic growth. We'll contribute to that as the DMV by coordinating and facilitating employment placement and services to deserving military veterans. And that is also part of our priority, comprehensive support services to military veterans, facilitation of employment placement, and also a facilitation of or advice on business opportunities. And then furthermore, we'll also ensure active participation by military veterans in the mainstream economy through instruments that already exist in and across government, and also as our priority, education, training, and skills development. On the priority of the skills and human resource base, the outcome is a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. Our contribution as the DMV will be to coordinate employment support as well as working together with other organs of state that provide venture capital for SMMEs as well as any other employment opportunities and empowerment projects to source support from also the National Skills Fund. we are already doing that in a small way. And our priority, of course, is still also providing comprehensive support services, as well as promoting empowerment programs for military veterans and initiatives that will pursue aggressively to ensure that there is widening of access to economic participation to military veterans, and then utilizing preferential procurement mechanisms with the DMV and other departments of state, as well as the private sector, and then operationalizing the special purpose vehicle. Chairperson and members, on the priority of a massive program to build economic and social infrastructure, the outcome is an efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network whose DMV contribution is ensuring active participation in the economic infrastructure development through mechanisms of triple BEE policies. And our priority is still promoting empowerment programs for military veterans, and also during this financial year or fiscal year, initiatives that will be pursued to embrace the widening of access to economic participation to military veterans. On building cohesive, caring and sustainable communities, outcome 7 speaks to vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities to contribute towards food security for all. Our contribution as DMV, what is it? That is to ensure active participation by military veterans in rural development and land reform programs through ownership and tenure systems. And in that regard, we have already entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Land and Rural Development, which we are now beginning to operationalize. Our priority in this context is providing immediate social relief of distress to the most vulnerable, and also looking at how do we then intervene within that, and identifying those that reside within this category, and see what interventions we can put in place for immediate relief. On massive programs to build economic and social infrastructure, that speaks to outcome 8 of the outcomes of government, outcome 9, building cohesive and responsive, accountable and effective, efficient local government system. This, for us, our priority will be to, and contribution will be to partner with municipalities in order to provide desired service delivery to military veterans, as well as making sure that military veterans are part of community initiatives wherever they reside. Also recognizing ensure recognition of and participation by military veterans associations and individuals in local government structures. So the priority for us during this will be initiatives that will embrace widening access to economic participation as well. And then last but one, outcome 10 on environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. Our contribution will be to facilitate the contribution of military veterans to national efforts on environmental protection. And then outcome 11, which speaks to regional development, African advancement, and enhanced international cooperation. And the government outcome being creating a better South Africa and a better and safer Africa in a better world. Our contribution will be to establish nationally the departmental structures with a footprint in the provinces to facilitate access by military veterans to service delivery points, but also strengthening our, as a department and also in partnership with military veterans associations, military veterans support partnerships at continental and international level, as well as participating in internationally established structures of military veterans, such as the World Veterans Federation, which is a UNESCO recognized and accredited structure. Lastly, the question on the MTSF priorities, building a developmental state, which includes improving the public services and strengthening democratic institutions. The outcome 12 of that speaks to an efficient, effective and development-oriented public service and an empowered, fair and inclusive citizenship. Our contribution as a DMV will be to comply with the Philly principles in service to military veterans, and also a conscious effort to utilize military veterans with the requisite skills and competencies to improve the state of government machinery. We will pursue these rigorously. And of course, our priority also is then to implement a high impact communication and marketing strategy, and then putting in place the governance structures and oversight protocols as laid out in the Act and other policies across government. So in terms of our contribution to the job creation agenda, I'll not go through all of those points, but to just quickly leave what is expected from the National Development Plan, which is, and I quote, the country needs an economy that is more inclusive, more dynamic, and in which the fruits of growth are shared more equitably. For this reason, we are then determined to ensure that the needs of all military veterans within the country are taken care of, and this could eliminate poverty and reduce inequality in the country. And we are looking at doing that by using the following vehicles, ensuring that there is an environment for sustainable employment for military veterans, and then also supporting small businesses owned by or in partnership with military veterans through better coordinating the activities of different agencies across the state and the private sector, and then initiatives to support these through also preferential procurement mechanisms, and then improvement in the skills base of military veterans through access to better education and vocational training, and within this context, resuscitating the Center for Advanced Training, which is under ownership of the Department of Defense, but they are in very advanced discussions with respect to upgrades and the power utilization of that facility. And then finalizing the military veterans companies database and reduction in the level of unemployment using military veterans, reduction by 3% in the 2013-14 financial year. Briefly, in terms of the contribution to the COSAD implementation plan, we are focusing on achievement of targets as set by FOSAD. FOSAD is the Forum of South African Directors General, which links to cabinet. Now, the priorities as set out, and we just thought we should flag this so that the committee has a full visibility on our activities, will be implemented as required, ensure performance agreements of accounting officers are in place and signed and submitted by the executive authority, developing and approving service delivery improvement plans. This is also in the APP and submit to the DTSA. Furthermore, ensuring that there is feedback to the presidency on all cases from the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, and also that cases are concluded within the stipulated timeline determined by Public Service Commission. And then furthermore, maintaining the current status of obtaining unqualified audit outcomes with no matters. And then ensuring that financial disclosures of all senior managers are concluded and filed with the Office of the Public Service Commission, and that cases that are referred from the presidential hotline are resolved. And lastly, that the exception report on a 30-day payment to suppliers is submitted to National Treasury as per instruction note from Treasury of November 2011. And we believe that during this financial year, we would be able to achieve that now that we are embarking on separate independent financial management systems as well as human resources administration systems. On contribution to youth development, just briefly, this is in the context of the dependence of military veterans and what we can do in that regard. Because many military veterans, in fact, the significant majority fall outside the category that you could classify as youth. So for our purposes, it is specifically then targeted at dependence of military veterans. And in that regard, providing education support to military veterans and their dependents as part of our mandate, and then employment opportunities for military veterans, and then utilizing preferential procurement and then partnerships as well as intensive programs. And in line with the National Development Plan's objective of job creation, we'll also facilitate and enable military veterans to ensure that there's provision, there's improvement in the skills base of military veterans. And we'll, during this year, also as part of improvement of the skills base, also focus on upgrading this Center for Advanced Training, which we referred to earlier. Policy proposals that we put forward in support of the priorities of the Minister speak to those 6 bullet points, an ICT strategy, an anti-criminality strategy of the DMV, healthcare policies, a white paper on military veterans, that is in the NTF period, risk management strategy and risk management policy. So those are policy proposals, but furthermore, now the, what are the policy initiatives that impact on spending patterns? Now, this should be looked at and understood in the context of what we said at the beginning, that this year for the first time there is now a budget allocated for delivery to military veterans, separate from the administration budget. But having said that, we will prioritize during this financial year the servicing of military veterans in accordance with Section 5 of the Military Veterans Act. And the minister's priorities actually are drawn from the thrust of what is in Section 5 that spells out all the benefits. But concretely also, to move with speed as we already started with the National Treasury Office of the Auditor General, Office of the Accountant General, to realize a separate budget vote for military veteran mandate in the next financial year. As you know, we are still part of Vote 22, which is titled Vote 22 of the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. We are hoping that in the next financial year, it will be Vote 48 or Vote whatever number it is of the Department of Military Veterans. And then furthermore, to realize an adequately resourced and fully functional department with requisite systems, regulatory frameworks, policies and processes to fast-track delivery on the military veterans mandate, and then also providing comprehensive support services to military veterans and dependents, and promoting heritage as well as memorialization, maintaining a credible and secure database, and then ensuring empowerment programs for military veterans. As part of Vote 22, the strategic budgeting information speaks to three different programs, which are the programs of the Department of Military Veterans. Those are respectively the administration program, the socio-economic services program, the empowerment and stakeholder management services program. On the administration program, the purpose thereof is to provide management and strategic administrative support to the ministry and overall management of the Department of Military Veterans, and it has within it six sub-programs, ministerial and departmental direction, which if you look at the structure would speak to the Office of the Director General as well as the Inner Office of the Director General, the Branch Corporate Services, and then within that financial administration, management, including internal audit, strategic support, office accommodation, and so on, including HR and strategic support. Mm-hmm. On the socio-economic services branch, the purpose thereof is to develop and monitor implementation of legislation, policy frameworks and service level agreements on primary and secondary healthcare services, home-based care services, wellness and counseling services, and prevention and support services. And the sub-program within that are database and benefits management as a sub-branch, research and policy development, similarly healthcare and well-being support and socio-economic support services, respectively. Lastly, on the programs, empowerment and stakeholder management, that speaks to its purpose as being managing, facilitating and implementing a military veterans empowerment and stakeholder management program. And in that regard, split into three main sub-branches, provincial office management and stakeholder relations, the military veteran skills development and empowerment programs, and lastly, heritage, memorials, burials and honors. Chairperson, we move on to selected performance indicators, and as indicated at the very beginning, these are only selected. The full thrust of all the performance indicators is in Appendix A of the annual performance plan. Speaking now to the outcome against which there's a DMD outcome, and then what is the DMD output, as well as the current baseline 2012-13, and the current as well as the medium-term projections, a healthy life for all. The outcome is the dignified and facilitated activities to provide coherent assistance to military veterans. Our output is military veteran socio-economic support services, and within that it speaks to, as performance indicators, the total number of military veterans with access to dedicated counseling and medical treatment, the total number of deserving veterans with the military veterans with access to health care services per year, the number of deserving military veterans with decent housing per year. And all of those responsibilities lie within the social economic support services branch and the different sub-branches respectively. And then still, under dignified and facilitated activities providing coherent assistance, the military veterans empowerment and stakeholder relations is our output, and the indicator there would be the number of deserving military veterans with access to training and skills development per year. And that is the responsibility residing within the branch empowerment and stakeholder relations. And the remaining ones that speak to outcome 12 and outcome 4 on military veterans empowerment and stakeholder relations are the number of military veterans memorial sites erected per year, and then also the number of events honoring military veterans per year, and then lastly the total number of private sector companies in partnership with the Department of Military Veterans. And all of those three are selected performance indicators within the empowerment and stakeholder relations branch and sub-branches. Chairperson, to quickly move through the program to that is socio-economic support services. Within the socio-economic support services branch, the objectives have already been spelled out, but to then highlight on the sub-programs, that database and benefits management, that is to provide an administrative support for the department and playing a pivotal role to establish and manage the database. On research and policy development, to have an equitable and sound environment for promoting interest of military veterans through continuous research processes and providing information on managing military veterans based on international standards, as well as ensuring that the military veterans regulations are developed for approval. And then on healthcare and well-being support, facilitating the provision of healthcare and well-being support of military veterans. And in that regard, 270 military veterans accessing counseling through the military veterans healthcare practitioners and 3,000 military veterans having had access to healthcare. And then socio-economic support services, as the last sub-branch, facilitating socio-economic support services to military veterans, such as housing, pensions, and transport, are put in place, and consolidating the development of the general regulations, and then developing draft policies on education, support to military veterans, as well as healthcare and wellness support to military veterans. On program three of the Department of Military Veterans Empowerment and Stakeholder Relations, the objective of that particular branch has already been spelled out, but to go into the slight detail of the provincial office management and stakeholder relations, whose task or responsibility is to facilitate and coordinate military veteran stakeholder institutions and providing administrative support to secure stakeholders from both public and private institutions, and so on. And then the military veteran skills development and empowerment programs as a sub-branch program, within that to ensure reskilling programs and related activities so that military veterans contribute positively to mainstream economic activities. And then heritage, memorial, burials, and honors, providing services to honor the contributions made by military veterans and ensuring that their memoirs and memories are adequately secured, articulated in a dignified manner. The overall budget allocation on program level, and that's page 26 of the budget, starting with the immediate past financial year 2012, the allocation having been 101,403,000. This financial year is standing at 351,431,000. And next 504,504,000,000 and the 605,000,000 in the outer year, that is 2015-16. So there is growth in certain areas, and then in others it's almost level. In terms of our 2013-14 estimate of national expenditure budget allocation, we see there the breakdown of now starting with 13-14, 14-15, and 15-16, broken down now into compensation of employees, goods and services, transfer and subsidies, and payment for capital assets, respectively. And those figures being illustrated there. And we see once again they're the high figure in the first financial year, and then in the outer years, in some areas, there's a reduction. A particular payment for capital assets is 10 on 13, 14, but in 14, 15, and the outer year, it goes down. But on the compensation of employees, it's 80 on the current financial year, but goes up to 98 in 14, 15. And this is mainly due to increase of personnel as we fulfill and finalize our staff complement, as well as related activities once you have the requisite human resources within the department. Similarly, with goods and services impacted on by us. And they have no transfer and subsidy at the moment. The spending forecast over this medium term will be on the filling of the critical posts and supporting delivery of benefits to military veterans. And of course, we expect that across all three programs, the spending will increase significantly as we are building up sufficient capacity to deliver on our mandate, especially following the enactment of the Military Veterans Act. And then it must be understood that the projected increase over the medium term is to provide for development and implementing the required information and communication technology, security services, legal services, policies, procedures, communication and marketing of the military veterans program. And the projected expenditure increase is also meant to provide as a statutory and obligatory responsibility internal audit consultancy services, for which that speaks to the internal audit directorate, but also externally funding for audit services and the fees due to the Office of the Auditor General for audit work that they will be doing. And then lastly, provision of infrastructure and projects. On the administration program in the allocation, there is a breakdown once again for those areas of compensation of employee goods and services, again putting us at 1.9 million for this current financial year, and going into 14-15, 163, 15-16, 303 million with the respective growth in percentage terms. Now, this again is an explanatory which I've already indicated that the projected increase is due to the filling of critical posts in terms of our organizational structure and providing accommodation requirements and other operational requirements. And then also the developing that ICT systems here. So, now lastly on this, the projected expenditure is accounted for by FEDA, by acquiring national and provincial offices. At the provincial level, we have not yet acquired office space, but also part of the projected expenditure increase will be on establishing provincial health and wellness centers, and then establishing the tomb of the unknown soldier, which we are in advanced discussion with Department of Public Works, as well as the City of Tshwane. Infrastructure upgrade on the Defense Center for Applied Advanced Training, the CAT that is still under ownership of the Department of Defense, and developing headstones and going into production of those for grades of military veterans. And then the decrease in the program administration and machinery equipment is informed by the fact that in the outer years, that is 2014-15 and 15-16, that is capital equipment, so those things would have already been in place or completed, so there would not be any need to purchase any more furniture or machinery or equipment, as well as other infrastructure requirements. On the socio-economic support, Chair, I know I saw the note that I've got 5 minutes left. The economic classification is still on the compensation of employees, or all the groups of classification. It brings the budget for the branch socio-economic support services at 135 million. Out of that, 351 million. And then for 2014-15, 182. And then for 15-16, 283 million. You'll see that there is no transfers and subsidies from the socio-economic support program. There's no payment for capital assets, because that is covered under the administration program. But the main thrust is compensation of employees as well as goods and services. Still on that, the explanatory note to it is that this increase is focused on provision of delivery of housing to military veterans in accordance with the signed memorandum of understanding with the Department of Human Settlements, and then also the funding, the health assessment, as well as provision of proper health care services to military veterans, and then increase also on what we need to do with respect to research, policy development, and education funding to military veterans and their dependents. Last, on the economic classifications, with respect to the empowerment grant, and empowerment and stakeholder management grant, the overall budget for this year will be 76.4 million, and in the next year, 157,909,000, almost 158, and then in 2015, 170 million for the empowerment and stakeholder management grant. Also here, there are no transfer and subsidies, there's no payment for capital assets, but in terms of compensation of employees, it stands at that 22 million, respectively for this current financial year, and 53 million for goods and services, hence making up that 76 million. Now, the explanatory to that budget outline for the empowerment and stakeholder management program is the focus also as with the other branches, and this bringing the totality of the department, the filling of critical posts, establishing the governance structures in accordance with the Act, that is Military Veterans Appeals Board, as well as the Military Veterans Advisory Council. And then also the erecting of memorial sites for military veterans, as well as funding for improvement of capacity in the provinces, provincial capitals that will be established, and then investing in preservation of heritage, facilitating establishment of heroes, acres, and monuments to province. And then lastly, on the empowerment and stakeholder management, explanatory skills and empowerment program to that figure of military veterans, and finding the improvements that have to be done to the Center for Advanced Training, as well as reskilling and development of military veterans. Chairperson and members, we made a budget rate, all-inclusive breakdown of the budget allocated to us for this year, and that briefly spells out those particular items in terms of accommodation, machinery and equipment for national and provincial offices, healthcare and wellness, housing transfers, education support, business, skills development, corner functions, provincial office operation, research and policy development, database verification, areas and memorial admin support costs within the context of technology, ICT, legal and financial management, improvement and other services, as well as audit costs, and thus bringing us to that figure. In terms of personnel information, in that regard, our projected medium-term expenditure estimate for this financial year, we are targeting to ramp up to a target of 135 employees on the establishment of the Department of Military Veterans, and then increasing finally to, in the 2014-15, 169 employees or staff complement of the Department of Military Veterans. And that is the projection. We're basing the medium-term expenditure figure on the basis of the current approved structure that we have as approved by the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, as well as the Minister of the Public Service and Administration. Chairperson, just before I conclude, to then highlight just some strategic risks, as indicated in the presentation, a point that we made at the beginning: inadequate financial resources, human resources and infrastructure, that including accommodation and IT systems. We did indicate the gap between what has been allocated and what we desire. And then the lack of the monitoring and evaluation capability. This is more internal as well as external. Internal to monitor the effectiveness of programs that deliver to military veterans, but also doing an external monitoring through using whether the GCIS or using whatever research that we can to monitor that effectiveness. And then ensuring that the completeness and integrity of information on the database is not compromised. That is absolutely critical. The Act, Military Veterans Act, imposes a responsibility on us for the database, that we are the custodian of the database. The completeness and its integrity is absolutely critical because it is the basis upon which we deliver to military veterans. And then lack of data regarding available skills, and then again link to the database, how we are wholly reliant on the database in terms of a skills audit and the database itself. So in conclusion, we hope that through this presentation has received, as well as the more comprehensive annual performance plan, we've been able to indicate with what treasury is allocated through the estimate of national expenditure and in the national budget in February, has been made clear that we will have qualitative delivery on the mandate to military veterans, and that we will fast track this. We cannot fail, notwithstanding that we are saying what has been allocated is little, we intend to spend all of it, so that by the next financial year or even during the adjustment, we can be able to show that we have indeed spent on that. And that that will make a case for improved allocation and to fast-track delivery for complaints to military veterans. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Gigi. Honorable members, this is the opportunity to comment and question. Honorable Sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, honorable officials from the department and the DG. Honorable Chair, I thought first of all to raise quite a few inconsistencies and inaccuracies and, of course, information that is corrected in both the budget as reported in the APP and the budget as reported in the budget document itself. I refer to the APP on page 25, 34, 37, and 39. That is the DMV's budget, Program 1, Program 2, and Program 3. If one looks at the budget itself, one can see, if we look under travel and subsistence, and we add up the figures, there are inaccuracies in the figures, and secondly, it's not reported in Program 3, any travel and subsistence, unlike what is reported within the E&E document itself. So it doesn't add up the figures. Secondly, when one adds the figures down as well, there's discrepancies. And I'd like to point that out also to the department, that somebody did not do their work to do the proper calculations, let us reconcile all these figures. Similarly, if we look at the budget itself, that the E&E document is page 525, page 526, page 528, and page 530. That's in the other document, where we actually see the figures. When we look at the figures itself and we add it up, then we'll also notice that there's inaccuracies within the figures. So I made a note of all those inaccuracies, and maybe we need to point that out to the department. That's within the budget itself. And then secondly, we deal also with the long-term infrastructure plan, which is on page 55 of the APP. Page 55, we look at that page, then we'll find that the figures are a little lopsided, and I hope that the department has corrected that, because otherwise one cannot actually add up the figures. There needs to be a shift in the bottom line of the totals, so that we can actually line up. The other one is also, if one look at the housing, as in the presentation, where the infrastructure plan is, where there's a breakdown of the 300 million additional cost, we find that there's 68 million indicated in the presentation done now by the DMV, but within the document itself and within the budget, we find there's only an allocation of 60 million for housing, which is also not comparing with what we have. Of course, we dealt only with 5 risks, and in the document, we deal actually with 9 risks. Then, of course, on APP page 74, we also find there's some issues there regarding the numbers that we have. Okay, now I'm not going to deal with that right now. Let me deal with page 79 of the APP, where we have the strategic initiatives as zero for the year 1340. And on page 82, it's also zero, but when you add up the figures for every quarter, it's actually 10. So there's either typographical error, but it's reported in both as zero, which is totally incorrect. On page 80, in outcome high, formal agreements, it refers to three agreements. If you go to page 82, they speak about five of these formal agreements, the higher institution of learning. Then, of course, on page 80, again, outcome four, we have it reported as zero. But on page 80, on the, we find the accumulation, when you add up the figure, it's actually 10. So if we look at page 80, if I can just read it out quickly. It says here, total number of private sector companies in partnership with the department, and it says here, 1314 is no. Going ahead, it will be 10, 10, and 10. But if we go to page 82, then we find in 1314, annual class is 10. Looking over the quarterly period, which is every quarter, it's supposed to add up, and it's only 4. So that's also inconsistency. Then we got the inconsistencies, a few of them, in terms of cumulative and non-cumulative issues. We look at page 64 and page 76. When one says it's cumulative, then one gets the same total as your target at the end of those years. If it's non-cumulative, you must add up the individual figures to give you the actual figure. So if we look at 64, page 64, it speaks to the issue of number of deserving military veterans with decent housing. And it says here, cumulative, 1,500, but it gives you non-cumulative figures, 300, 300, 400, 500. Then we've got also, if we look at the, on page 76, I'm raising this particularly, Mr. Chair, because we raised it last year as well, and I said the department must take extra caution that all the figures actually reconcile, and that somebody sits and compares figures in one APP and the other one with the budget and the other one with the strategic plan as well. If we look at page 76, we deal again here with number of deserving military veterans with decent housing. It's a cumulative, it is 1,500, and then it is your 300, 300, 400, 500. It's supposed to be 300, 600, 1,000, 1,500. Similarly, total number of deserving military veterans with access to healthcare, non-cumulative, which is 10,000. So it's supposed to be 2,800 plus, it says here, 2,800, 5,800, 9,000, 10,000. So those are just dealing with all the inaccuracies and inconsistencies within the report before I start. I would like us to refer to the first one is the budget itself. The budget, we know in 2012-13, the budget allocation for military veterans benefits, there was an amount of 1/6 that was promised by Treasury, which was never transferred to the department. And then, of course, when we reach 13-14, we find that the budget speaks to 1.3 billion. But when I add up the figures for the different programs and over the MTEF, it gives me actually 1.462 billion. So I just want us to get an understanding. That's on page 503 of the budget itself. What is actually the figure that we're dealing with? Because we're dealing with different figures all the time. Pertaining to the vacancies in 2012-13 was supposed to be 70 in total. It's reported in the ALE as 17, and of course within the presentation, I think it is 18 on page 37 of the DMV presentation just done. Then of course we've got an actual number for 11-12, or 12-13 now, is 27, but in the actual APP, there's a report of 29. So there's also 43 positions that needed to be filled by the end of the financial year 12-13. There were secondments of 47 from Department of Defense, and of course, 6 additional members from contract workers. That were about 53 extra people that were added on. So the other question I have is, when we have these people and we add them up as 53 plus 29 that are working, the others are seconded, we sit with a travel and subsistence budget which escalates. If we look at the numbers currently and what is being currently used for travel and subsistence, it goes right up to 90-some-odd million. I don't understand how that can be done when we already have 53 plus 29 people using that budget. And how do we actually inflate that, if that can also be explained to us? So the vacancies is a problem because the filling of positions have been extremely slow, and that is considered one of the high risk. And we'd like to know, because there was also a company that was supposed to assist with the shortlisting and advertising, and how effective that was, and if the Defense Department of HR, the HR was in defense, why did they not execute it themselves, being at this moment still part of defense? The issue of the database itself is another issue. The database, there's lots of confusion. I read in the one report it's 56,500, less than that. The other report is 57,000, and that was as reported according to the CPR and the update since 1996 and up till 2007 and of late about 2009. We've had 2011, 12, and 2013. We had two campaigns for registration and re-registration. Now, there was reported by Mr. Matumi, there were 8,000 in the first round and 20,000 in the second round. We have a report that is verified military veterans are only 13,768. Now, I'm saying what happened to the others? And if it's 13,768, are they from the existing database? Because there were a number of people, because I will even visit the status for registration, that were actually not on the database and they were registered. What happened to those people? So the figures are definitely all not corresponding, and I think the database even referred to within the annual report. It speaks to 15, 16, 17 hundred percent that will only then comply, meaning that it will be properly audited, it will be in place, everything will be checked. Does it mean that we cannot effectively deal with military veterans and the issues until 1617? So I've got a serious concern that the database is not being expedited. It's priority number six in terms of the executive authority's priorities, and I'm not seeing that urgency in driving this to a conclusion in the best interest of military veterans. We have also the issue of the regulations. The regulations have come, and I want to thank the department for at least that has been executed. But that hinges onto a number of things. One, we have to execute this within 30 days before publication in the Gazette, which means there's a whole public participation process, SANVA, all military veterans association, all interested parties, all affected parties. When are we going to tackle that? Because that is part of the process.
Question or comment?
No, it's questions as well as comment, because I have to explain the context. Otherwise people don't understand the context.
Question.
The question is regulations hinges on MOUs, memorandum of understanding, service level agreements, on policies, on frameworks, on guidelines, on sister departments, on government agencies. And these things have to be done in tandem with regulations. Otherwise, we are fooling military veterans to say that we are going to commit ourselves and we are not doing the job that can actually make the payments to them. And I think this is very important that we have to work these things in tandem.
Comrade Boyce?
I'm sure that we also give you patience by listening to you. But at the end of the day, you can't come to a judgment that they were fooling. Because then you are jumping the ship, because at no stage have we started to debate the processes that are talking about. At no stage have we had the submission of exactly what is happening to regulations. So for me to say that we are fully, they are judging us very lightly, the members of parliament.
No, I'm not referring to us, Honourable Chair. I'm saying that what I'm saying is that we are telling people that we've completed our regulations and that we are ready to pay out. Mm-hmm. But we cannot pay out because, Honourable Chair, there's a means test and there's a number of other issues that leads to it. So what are we doing? Are we giving real expectations to be dealt with for people? Are we telling people, yes, we've come so far, but we can't give you anything yet? And no, I think this is not good for...
I want you to be short and straight to the point now.
Okay, so those are the issues that I just want to do in tandem. We look at the means test, an update of the means test, the MOUs, the SLAs, the policies, the frameworks. What is the actual position that is part of the database? The other one, Mr. Chair, I want to deal with is benefits have been issued as announced.
No, we are dealing with the budget. So can we confine ourselves to the budget? All this
actually I am dealing with the budget. I'm referring to page 42 APP. I'm referring to, I can give you all those numbers that I've taken it from.
No, because you see, you are dealing with, I mean, regulations. They are not in the budget now. I mean, they cannot be treated differently. Also, honorable members, we also want to have the contribution into the budget. I want to give you respect and continue to pleading that. Also, treat us with some respect.
Thank you very much.
And we stick to what is in the presentation, honorable result.
Thank you. Thank you, honorable chair. What I would also like to note here is there's been bursaries that has been issued in terms of the budget and also the APP. Bursaries been issued to individuals and also to the quarterly reports that were received. There was housing, also a pronouncement made by Mr. Matumi himself, and of course health costs that were issued, 1,100 out of a possible 6,500. And of course in terms of the ABP we got 2,500 and initially 267 for the counseling and other treatment. So I'm asking, if the regulations were not in place, the means test was not in place, how did the department determine the issuing of those cards and those benefits? Are we being fair to military veterans or not, or only to certain military veterans? If we can get clarity on that, I would appreciate it. Similarly, with immediate relief.
Chair, I don't know why being a certain military veterans, because I don't understand how to come to such a conclusion. Who are these military veterans are referring to when you say certain, military veterans? How do you come to this judgment?
Mr. Chair, I can read you. This is actually the newspaper in SA News. It was published also here. About the others. These were done.
What is it from? In what?
SA News.
News?
Yes. And there was actually a program that stated that it was scheduled to flood in Lampoter and Indonesia, and it was given a second phase. The second phase was put on us.
Honorable,
thank you, sir. Is there anything that relates to what the honorable is talking to in the APP? Because my understanding of the APP is that which is going to be done. Now, if the department has made announcement outside the APP, currently we're dealing with the APP, and I think I agree with Honorable Boy that the other things that the department is doing or is to do, or they have already done, I think they know the consequences to that. But currently, we are dealing with APP, that which we're supposed to be doing, to be done. I would also want us to focus on that, whether we agree with that, or interrogate what the APP says. That which you are going to be able to do, or the department is going to be based on what they are giving. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable, how are you done?
I'll double check on
Honorable Kunabat.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know what the procedures are. It seems you have to ask questions because all the questions have actually been asked. And I must say that the questions that have been asked, if you look at the APP and that what has been represented, you know, it's a serious problem, Chairperson. It doesn't reflect very well. And as the honourable member has said, then there are certain consequences. So what I want to know, Chairperson, is firstly, who qualifies for benefits at the moment? We have a budget in front of us, and yet in a certain sense it does refer to the regulations. And I don't want, I suppose, well, we have to look at the regulations, that's a different meaning. But what I want to say to you, person, is at the moment what I'm picking up amongst veterans is it seems that there's some exclusive group that receives benefits. Therefore, my question is, who at this moment qualifies for the benefits? I want to link it to bursaries. I see that we have given 4 million rand for bursaries, if I am correct. I see the, which looks, if I look at the page or slide 36, an all-inclusive breakdown of budget allocated to benefits, it says bursaries 4 million. Maybe I misunderstand it, but please help me then. That is what we are budgeting for this year. So 4 million for bursaries. Now tell us how many people is going to benefit from it. Do we have applications at this moment? What or which veterans are going to qualify for them? I will just put this one question at the moment on the table. Thank you.
DG, the was always a military veteran site in South Africa.
Yes, 1999.
So the benefits have not stopped. You must also clarify that. The 99. Before 99. You must also give us the historical background of that. Thank you very much. Any other question?
Sorry, Chair. Do I understand that correctly? Only those veterans, in terms of the existed Veterans Act, only they get these benefits. I want to make very clear.
You aren't coming before your person.
No, Chairperson, I'm not coming in to represent the department. I thought that we are all part of the presentation, so I also have some questions to raise.
The DG will respond, and then we come back to it. Let's give it another round after Mr. Sports, Honorable Mazia, Honorable Menia. DG?
Thanks, Chef. Let me start with the last point, comment that has been made. Yes, the department is new, just about 3 years old, but it does not mean that before that there were no military veterans. There were military veterans. There was an act indeed, the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999. But even before that, there was a whole range of dispensations that were in place for those who served the country in whatever capacity. But at that time, before the Military Veterans Affairs Act, the specific dispensations that were there after the Second World War for retaining soldiers from the Second World War and a range of benefits, actually almost mirror what we have in the Act now, in the Military Veterans Act 2011 now. So with the advent of the Act, it did not mean that it is the start of the process with respect to military veterans delivered, but it was more in terms of an emphasis on a fair number of military veterans who had been excluded from the dispensation, as whether in the 1999 Act, whatever gaps or deficiencies were there, because it was used also as a reference point in developing the Act as we have now, since there is now a department. So that there is a department does not mean that there was no entity or some structure within government that was dealing with that. In fact, there was a director of military veterans inside the Department of Military Veterans. And it is that small director that got absorbed into the Department of Military Veterans as it was starting. They were the first of the people that came across from the Department of Defense as we were starting the Department of Military Veterans. But to now turn to the points that the Honorable Member has always raised pointedly on the inconsistencies in the APP and the figures and so on, those have been noted. We will want to engage specifically on those, and then we will correct them then in the APP. Regarding the letter of allocation over the MTF, that will be 1.4 billion as given by the National Treasury in the ENE. On the matter of the SSNT, should remember that subsistence and travel is related to not only the number of personnel that you have on the establishment, but it also links to the number of activities that get undertaken for and on behalf of the department, sometimes even by people who are not, or functionaries or whatever, who are not necessarily members of the department. So as we go on to increase our staff capacity, as we go on to increase implementation of different programs, inevitably you would have linked to that an increase in whatever, there'll be increased travel, there'll be increased subsistence and travel expenditure. So that is, I mean, for instance, if you're running a 2 to 3 month campaign on the database, that is a combination of functionaries of the Department of Military Veterans and Reservists. SNT would come in there. Or for any other activity that is within the prescript of duty away from home or from station, that would also apply. So I think that it should be understood within that context. The matter of the vacancies, we are addressing that as we speak in a different format. We have four categories of staff on our establishment. Starting with the permanent staff, which at the moment stands at 43 permanent staff. And then we have members who are on call-up. Called up as reservists, it's a different category or dispensation of bodies that we have. Then we have contract workers that we have, and then the last category then it's internship that we have. So that is what constitutes the totality of what we have as a staff complement. Now, as we continue to fill posts, there are going to be, in fact, we've already taken a decision, there's going to be a significant decrease, I should emphasize that, decrease in the number of reservists on the fence of the Department of Military Veterans, so that we get people on the permanent establishment, and then similarly the other categories as well. So that in the end, when you look at the total picture of the staff complement, which this year, at the end of this year, we're projecting, and in our plan, as you see, we're looking at 135. The significant majority of those will be permanently appointed staff on the strength of the Department of Military Veterans. The other questions we'll look at, and this is similar, this is speaks to what we said earlier about, we'll look at the issue of consistency that you're raising, that in the database cleanup the results are not done. We do have figures. Indeed, the figure after the two campaigns of the database is just under 14,000. That 768. It is indeed the figure that we have now after having run the two database cleanup campaigns. That number is fully checked, verified, details updated. But it's a continuous process aside from that, and the database is not closed per se, but it's something that continues because we always have people that are there. Let me pause there, Chairperson.
Sorry, Chairperson, but my question has not been answered.
Yeah, no. I pointed Honorable Menier. Honorable Menier, we'll come back to you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. When we were deliberating on the Military Veterans Act, the Military Veterans Database comprised of 56,064 members, and there was a total liability of 65 billion. Now that the two registration campaigns have been completed, what is the total number of military veterans on the database, and what is the total liability? That question one. Question two, and I think this, with respect, goes to the heart of the issue. And let me speak plainly. Chair, there is a suspicion, and the Honourable Kinnebold alluded to this, that the purpose of the real purpose of this department is not to disperse benefits to military veterans, but to disperse benefits to MK military veterans. That is the concern. That is, I do not believe it is true, but that is the concern that the department are saddled with. So my question
Honourable Media, you are part of the Act, the Military Veterans Act. I don't know what is the purpose of that suspicion, because you're part of that Act.
I'm suggesting there is a public perception. Now, my question is, has the department developed a policy and a formula to disperse benefits in a context where your demand for benefits will always exceed your supply of benefits? Because in allocating the marginal benefit, you are going to have to ensure in our constitutional setup, A, I believe, that benefits are in the first instance channeled to the most needy military veterans, or military veterans in the most need, but at the same time, that no group of military veterans is excluded. I think it's a hard problem. My question is, has the department grappled with the problem and begun to develop a policy to equitably and fairly distribute benefits to military veterans? That's my second question. My third question, Chair, is I think everybody on this committee recognizes and is concerned that there are many military veterans who are in desperate need, and we have a collective responsibility to ensure that those military veterans receive benefits, particularly benefits in respect of health care and housing. And yet, it seems that significant amounts of money have been spent not on directing benefits directly to military veterans, but to memorialization. So I come back to a question which I asked the DG some time ago, and he didn't have the data at the time, but I'm sure he does now. Ahead of the ANC's 2012 conference, there were three memorialization parades for MK veterans exclusively. What was the total cost of those three memorialization parades?
Honorable Mazi, Honorable Boy, you're following.
Thank you, sir. Honourable Minister have covered me on the part of the numbers. But Chairperson, I'm just worried because on the outcomes 1 to 5, on the side of priorities, there is this term that is used here which I don't understand. That says subject to availability.
What is that again?
Subject to availability. You see, so it's not only in one part, but it is on all the priorities that we have this term being used. Why do we commit to benefits and contradict them by saying that they will be provided if they are available? I think it raises some concerns. Now, also, in terms of the youth, you are saying you will be assisting the youth who are children of beneficiaries of the Act, but you are saying you will also cover those youth who are outside the Act, and those that are outside the Act are those that are the children of the beneficiaries. So I'm saying of the military veterans. Now, I'm getting into a section which I don't believe it is my section, because we are not discussing regulations now. However, Chairperson, it is necessary to take into consideration that the regulations obviously are going to manage this process. But regulations are not going to be tabled like a bill. Regulations don't go through public hearings. They are for a consideration of the committee, not for public consumption, as far as I know. And hence I'm saying I'm getting into a terrain which is not my terrain, but I think it is necessary to explain that regulations, once they are presented to us, it will be for consideration. Now, the other part, Chairperson, is I want to know from the DG, in your own view, in assessment of the conditions, I don't want to speculate, but I just want to have an idea. I'm 63 this year. How long do you think I will live? Now, I'm imagining that there may be...
For the spring chief.
Yes, I am. No. There may be a veteran who is 85 this year. Obviously, that veteran may not reach my age because the food today is not the same as, yeah, as during my time. So what I want to know from you, DG, is how... From now to 2030, how many more years do you think this program will continue to apply? Is it going to be extended to soldiers now that are in the Defense Force, or is it going to abruptly stop immediately once there are no guerrillas?
You see, Honourable Chair, you know, this program has been going on for some time, and it's been quite challenging. And I want us to, as Member of Parliament, take some responsibility on how we're handling the particular matter, which is a very important matter, and it does affect directly a lot of sometimes our own relatives. And, but within that, we want to be efficient and effective in how we do this. You know, with what Honorable Mazia is now raising, it's like asking what would happen to World War II people. I mean, those, if you listen to the DG say that some of these challenges have been ongoing and oncoming, have been predicted by any time, but it will come up, and the particular groups in society became demanding this type of responsibility, and they demand from the state, and we have a responsibility. And throughout this period that we've been here, for now it's about 20 years, and we have not been able, as members of parliament, to drive towards a solution of how we close up this chapter in a more, in a manner that makes all of us to come out feeling that we've taken responsibility, we've closed the chapter, and we've given it over to responsible hands. So I don't undermine the challenges that are being raised in terms of our conduct, but dealing with perceptions and dealing with a department that we have all created in during this particular year, which is very new. Now, I've had experience and listening to different creations of department, even with energy, that these type of challenges and creating of vacancies do arise over quite a number of time. So I wanted to appeal and really to deal with the consciousness of members of parliament, because it's quite clear for me that the expenditure are not stopping and they're not being guided by regulation. We might end up all of us in the same corner as the DG now, that what we do, or whether it's mounting outside of those that have got expectations, that a solution must be provided. I'm saying to members of parliament, what do we want to do? After I've asked all the other questions, can I put that is that this expenditure, how do we look at it and how do we limit it? Without pointing fingers at each other, because there's a serious call amongst ourselves to say that let's deal with this matter. We either say, let it go, but it will never go away. We have created in terms of, even in the constitution, even in terms of legislation, we have created this department. But we have not finished its own rules. But the reality that there's expenditures that are beginning to creep in day by day. As Honorable Henry is beginning to ask, where are these going? As the question is arisen, that there's just a few 4 million and then some history to be given. But I think as parliamentarians, we want to take a responsibility of having an efficient creation that we have created, which is called the military veterans. How do you want to deal with that particular question? I want to pose it to all of us, that when we raise a particular question, can reflect and also give ourselves the responsibility that how do we do this? Because you see, you can't, I mean, the Auditor General is going to come back heavily on this particular matter. He's not going to take any kind. He doesn't understand where we are working from. But as people who are overseeing this department, how do we put that and how do we take that responsibility of assisting to find a solution in this particular problem? I'm just presenting to all of us at the end of the day. But by next week also, we need to be able to tell the public what will be done in terms of military veterans. And I know it doesn't affect me, it doesn't affect anybody, but the old members of parliament who are taking responsibility around this particular area. What are we going to say? So I'm really appealing that at the end of the day, given the figures that have been provided, which Honorable Isawa has continuously been able to pinpoint the contradictions, but it's quite clear. I know the debate about the data, it's not new. I mean, we can try to making this debate about the data has been taking on in this department even before the creation of the military veterans upon us for some time. We need to be able to come to a conclusion amongst ourselves. How do we deal with this matter? This is 20 years. There are people who are dying. There are people who are struggling. And we need to be able to conclude. It's not only just about the guerrillas. It's even about, as we have already been saying in our own, this affects even former soldiers from the SATF and different components. Those things we have concluded there and been part of our policy as this committee, that this is a broad thing. But beyond, within our monitoring guide, this particular deadline, we might lose it. I'm just appealing. I'm not against anybody. Anybody can raise a question, but I'm just saying that it's at each and the back of each other's mind that's reflecting this matter and find a solution to it. It might help all of us. I mean, I know that my immediate family is under pressure wherever they are, but I don't want to argue for that. I want to argue for the collective here to see how to assist society to move forward around this particular problem. It's an appeal, really. It's not nothing else. It's that, well, there are challenges. I mean, I don't want to undermine the fact that there are vacancies created because it's, as you said, there will be a department called military veterans, and these vacancies are occurring. The fact that the data is not full is a challenge that must deal with that particular matter, which we've been dealing with in this particular forum. It's not new debate, it's not a new question, but we're not going to be able to resolve it. We are facing problems. That's all I want to do as a committee chair. Thank you for giving me an opportunity.
Honorable Dennis,
thank you, Chair. I've got one question and comment to the entire members of the department. Do the members of the department agree with me when I say maybe it is time that we put these benefits chronologically and begin to prioritize? Would you agree with me if I say that? And the reason that I operate in that, I don't know, branches is out there. I don't know why I guess it is that. Because this whole saga, I'm directly affected by it. The question that the owner of member is raised today, we already spend a lot of money in memorialization. And information that was spent on that memorialization. But I would also like to remind this committee that why there was memorialization. The caption that has been there when this memorialization was done, to the effect that memorialization was done for those members who democratized the country. I don't know if my memory serves me well, if that is captured in the act, we should also begin to raise a number of questions. Because now there are perceptions, there are myths, there are beliefs that are being raised to say this act is only for. And yet all of us around this table, members of parliament, were part of deliberating on this act. And it also begins to raise other questions to say, those people who are dual citizens, who were in South Africa, who are now residing in other countries, who are now military veterans, how are we going to deal with that? I think the boy is putting all of these things into context to say, let us begin to agree to disagree. And also agree that we have a challenge. But not only that, if you go back, time in memory, when members or soldiers were coming back from war, there's always been imbalances. But how can we begin to move away from that culture in this way? We agreed in the act to say that they are means test. So that those who will pass the means test must begin to benefit. But of course all the members have talked to the question of regulation. I don't want to go to enter into that debate yet. But also, the department must realize what their consequences if you're spending money without any policy in place. The treasury will come back to bite us if we do not have that in place so that we can spend this money. Can we begin to do that? Because people are dying, people are living in squalor, people are buried as paupers, regardless of the fact that we said we are coming back together. Both for those who are fighting a just and unjust war, who are all military veterans. And remembering that there are those who are still to get out of the Department of Defense in the near future, because the Treasury says we must cut down the strength of the defense. Are you ready to cater even for those who are coming from tomorrow outside the department? Can we begin to lay fears of those military veterans who are living today? Because others have passed on yesterday. We don't know how many, and who will be passing on tomorrow. Can we begin to deal with this issue and put it through so that we can be able to spend this money and get another budget and render service to the masses of the people out there who need it?
Thank you. Honorable Majer, I saw your hand up.
Actually, I mentioned my name before that.
Because Honorable Majer, I'm sharing.
We will take that a chairperson doesn't want, he recognizes me, but then he doesn't want to
recognize. Honorable Majer,
thank you, Chairperson. But I've been listening very carefully. Seemingly we are moving in circles here. The most important thing is that structures must be in place so that money can be spent. That's what we should be talking about now. And that is what we need to do as soon as yesterday. And it's us who must do that. So the next time we are blaming anybody, it's this committee that must make sure that that money starts working. So if we move around that, then we are not going to say the department is in trouble. And some of the things that we say is true, that we go for 20 years and people haven't been getting anything. would we say that if you don't have capacity, I remember some, maybe 20 years ago, I had a physical fight with some people within what was termed TLCs. There was money that was taken back, what it is, rolled over. And the explanation that they gave was that they didn't have capacity to spend. And I didn't understand that. It took me time to understand that you must really have capacity to spend. So it means structures must be in place because this department is new. I'm not justifying anything. But if you don't have capacity to spend, it means the department is not capacitated. Then they might end up using the money to buy clothes and suits and whatever, which happened at some stage with some PLCs. But still, we want that money to be spent. It's 20 years now. So I'm trying to say what Honorable Nyano is saying. Or we must take that into consideration. And memorialization, we talked about this. And we talked, at length about this. I remember giving an example to Honorable Manier, or it's like saying you are not going to build a sport ground, recreation facilities, all you are going to build is schools. Or these things are not comparable, uncomparable. The babies must play, they don't only go to school. So you are not going to say that you are not building a playground because school is more important. Otherwise you are creating zombies. So you are not going to say people must get this, memorialization is not important. He doesn't work that way. Unless if he simply grants them. My point or my question is, I'm interested in data verification. And I see it has got a lot of money, the 22 million, which is one of the most important, because you don't simply take out money without verifying. And surely verification is not, you definitely don't take 1 day to verify a military veteran who stays in Nongoma or who stays in an area that they used to, it was in an advert. If you are going to verify at a place like that, you might not even, if it's raining, you might not even be able to reach that place. And it means you won't be able to disperse them. So I'm interested in how do you, what does verification involve? Maybe it will even answer the SMC and so on. I thought that would, I just want to get the overview of everything, which would give me an idea of what is happening. I wouldn't like you to come up with figures. Not that I don't like mathematics, but figures, if I get the overall, it will give me an idea of what is happening. And when you finish there, we are still waiting for memorialization. We are still waiting for memorialization. Have you stopped?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Gigi. Honorable Kunabal, your follow-up question has not changed.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just say this, that I don't think there's any honorable member around this table who says that there should not be a secretariat. There must be one to do the administration. We all approve the bill of the act now. And yes, I take responsibility for that because I approved it. But that's exactly the point, Jefferson. That was my question that has not been answered. And actually, the other members also raised it, and the Honorable Daniels also raised it very specifically. I know that there's been military veterans before this specific act.
I know that.
Yes, I know that they have benefits. Of course. My question is to a person, if you look at the act at this moment, because this is the new act, it defines the military veteran. And a lot of people, according to the definition, are then a military veteran. I'm a military veteran according to the definition in the act. But then the act says, if I want the benefits, I have to pass the means test. And we don't have the means test. Yes, the regulations have only been published now. And that's my exact question. Are they new veterans under the new act, if I can put it that way, who are receiving benefits now? And if so, and that is what everybody is actually asking, on what criteria? Because the act says there must be a specific means test. And you see, citizen, that is what I'm confronted by. Because I say to people, yes, you, according to the definition, you are a military veteran. But you still does not qualify, well, you can't qualify except if you comply to the means test. And that's the whole issue. And my question was, and I repeat it again, what criteria does the department now use to say, listen, Mr. Khrunov, you're getting a lot of money, you qualify now. Or no, you still... I phoned Mr. McKinney at one stage, and he said to me, what are you looking at if a person is jobless? I can understand. If a person is jobless, it's jobless, because a means test is about a specific income of an individual. And therefore, I'm asking my question. What criteria is the department using now for people to say, listen, you qualify for benefits? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, we are closing on this. I gave this part of our discussion a little more time because of its sensitivity and because I've realized that the oversight report has been circulated amongst yourself since February, and there is nobody who came up with any amendment. So then I extended time for this discussion. So I reckon after the DG would have responded, would have closed this matter, and then go on and adopt our report. And on the cost for memorialization, the last question asked by Honorable Nemir and somebody else, I think the memorialization was done in the last financial year, 2012-2013. I reckon that will appear in the annual report or in the last quarterly report. We have to still have to deal with the last quarterly report. Honorable Mr. Digi.
Chair, on a point of order. My point of order, the DG knows how much was spent on memorialization. He can tell me now why I'm going to squeeze the sponsor out of him later. My suggestion is stop the pain. We've been going on for months.
You're out of order. The DG is not compelled to tell you because he can't take it out of his head. Then,
let us also correct the perception, Chairman. Memorials are done by the Department of Arts and Culture in many instances, because memorials are not activities that are taking place now that this act. Memorials have been taking place throughout since, and in most instances, they are funded by the Department of Arts and Culture, either from the level of the province or from the level of national. So we don't have to pretend we don't know.
Honorable member? Mr. Kitch.
I'm not yet honorable, sir.
Not
Chairperson, just a quick one on this, and in fact you stole my thunder on this particular question of memorialization. In response to Honorable Manir's question, I was going to indicate that we will report on that in more detail in the second quarter and the third quarter and fourth quarter report. I know that when we presented the first quarterly report, we had already had the first one, and members had asked about that particular one that happened in the second quarter, but we had not yet presented the second quarter report. So it will be covered in those three quarters, as of course, obviously, then the annual report being a culmination of that, without jumping the gun on getting the figures. Chairperson, the other questions that have been asked, I'll ask the colleagues to speak to. I'll ask DDG Rantler to speak on the issue of the data rates as well as the verification process, because they are two internally linked processes. Almost back to back, so to speak, and then also the issue of within that, and then the issue of the subject availability of resources and understanding the context to that, and then we'll take the others as we go.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of the database, I think Honorable was correct to say that very many people over and above the 15,000 that we quoted in our report came for registration. But what actually was happening is that the rationale behind that particular initiative of database update was not fully understood by our military veterans. The intention of that particular process was to say we already have a database of 56,500 military veterans. But when we look at the database, we did a quick analysis of it, we realized that we need to prepare ourselves as a department to be ready to deliver on benefits. And in doing that, the database as it stood at that point in time did not have sufficient information for us to use when we had to start with benefits provisioning. The department then agreed that we should go into an initiative that would enable military veterans already on the database to then update their personal files in the database, which then would include information on themselves, detailed information on themselves, on their dependents, and many other pieces of information that we needed to ready ourselves for benefits provisioning. However, when military veterans got to point where they had to update their personal files, it is not only those who were on the database that showed up. It is also a whole lot of military veterans who showed up, some of them not on the database, some of them with force number but not on the database. So what we ended up with at the end of this whole exercise was that we had, of the people we are really targeting, approximately 13,000 plus having updated their personal files on the database. We also ended up with a register of something like close to 20,000 military veterans, mainly from SADF, who did not have who are not on the database but have head force numbers, and a few also from NSF forces. And also we had a list, we have a third list of military veterans who at about 4,000 who neither demobilized nor integrated but considered themselves military veterans. Now based on that then, we realized that it was important to do two things. For those who had updated on the database, it was good, that's what we had gone out to achieve. The 20,000 that had military, that had force numbers but were not on the database, we are in a process as we speak with the Department of Defense to look at who exactly those people are, to verify those force numbers, to determine who exactly they are. Because people of different income categories do have phone numbers. I myself, as an example, am not a military veteran, but I do have a phone number. So the process that we're engaging right now with DOD to pull out from that group of people on the list of 20,000 who are bona fide military veterans. And in as far as the 4,000 military veterans that had needed a demobilized and integration, we then were persuaded to accelerate the process to verify bona fide military veterans for inclusion in the database. And that process as we speak is in progress. What is happening within that process is that a military veteran who feels that they want to be registered on the database has to go to his or her own military veterans organization for them to do a preliminary verification. Then the military veterans organization forwards the list of people who need to be finally verified to us, and the national panel is doing that as we speak. So that process is in progress. So I thought, Chairperson, I should clarify that in terms of the database and the numbers that don't seem to add up around that. In terms of prioritization for service delivery, I mean for provision of benefits, I think that is very critical. We also, as a department, struggled a lot around that to say how do we prioritize, because the Act is very clear and actually reality of resources also dictates that military veterans can't all at the same time, even as they are all needy, can't all at the same time receive benefits and in that way satisfy the needs that they are experiencing right now. We therefore had to sit down with the department to say how then do we prioritize, and the Act also speaks about on the basis of available resources, we should do progressive implementation. And that by implication, is it that a department would have to prioritize? Indeed, we have looked at that. And as Honorable Daniels alluded, we thought and agreed with ourselves in the department that we need to prioritize elderly military veterans. First of all, we need to prioritize NFF military veterans simply because, unlike military veterans from statutory forces, they were not receiving salaries for military services. So that was our first category of prioritization. Our second level of prioritization was that even within the NSF, we need to prioritize the elderly. And in that fashion, therefore, our priority is, yes, NSF, but secondly, elderly military veterans. We have not, Chairperson, started formally to provide benefits to military veterans. Because as public servants, we are very cognizant of the fact that to do that, we need... I was still coming to the Honourable Minister. We are cognizant as public servants that to do the work that we must do and deliver efficiently around benefits for military veterans, it was important for us for the department to have a law that anchors its mandate, and also to have regulations, policies, benefits, application forms, requisite guidelines, norms and standards. But much as that is what clinically is what we have to do, we have at the same time the reality that we have very destitute military veterans, and as a department we needed to do the best we can with whatever available resources to do that. I want to also quickly say in that context, we might not have followed the conventional way of doing things because all these things, the instruments that I had alluded to, were not all in place. However, the one critical means test that we used from day one, especially in relation to education, was to satisfy ourselves that people whom we were giving education support to were not employed. So that was the main critical means test that we used at that point in time before the means test that has now been that is now being proposed as means test for us moving forward. I'm saying proposed because it hasn't been quite approved yet. So if we have made mistakes because we were pushing the issue that we need to accelerate support services to military veterans who are destitute, we would hope that the portfolio committee would be sensitive to that. We are not saying endorse the wrongdoings that we might have done, but we are just saying be sensitive to all that. So in short, Chairperson, I thought that was important for me to explain.
Whoever doesn't understand this would be
Honorable Madam, closing this matter. If there are members who have observations or who want to comment further, they can write to the committee and then we'll factor that in the report. DJ?
Not here. I was just going to say just to round off what the DDG has indicated, that in those areas where we have actually, even with the limited resources, even before we got the allocation this financial year, where we started to deliver, we did not just take that out of the sky. We specifically, in aligned with trade regulations, got ministerial authority for that. Before, you remember that the Act was only passed in 2011. Mm. But during 2011, already, as we've been with the bills, we already had reality that there is a crisis situation that we're dealing with. And it is within that context that we prioritize healthcare, access to healthcare, and then this education as well as bearer support. And for all of those that we have done thus far, we do have the necessary ministerial authority. Once the regulations come through and are dealt with and they're deliberated upon, it will be even an additional card that we will then have within that context. Because that's non-contributory assistance that is provided by a number of governments. So within that context, and we did that following treasury guidelines to do that. So it's not it was not the official wish, but the executive authority does understand that.
Yeah. Okay, can we just say thank you for at least we get an honest answer. I do not agree with what the other.
Okay.
But for the first time,
honorable member,
we get the honest.
Honorable,
I want to compliment them for the honest.
You did, okay. Honorable members, if there are any more comments and any observation, please write to the committee and that can be factored in the report. The time is up. I think we have given you enough time to deal with this matter. Can we go to the next agenda, honorable members? The report.
Okay, just a point of opinion. I did indicate at the beginning that I actually waited for others to ask questions, and I spent 3 weeks studying.
Honorable member.
We have a lot of questions.
Honorable member, I'm saying those questions that you have, the observation that you have, you can still send them in a written form. Can we go on to the next item? Our next item is the report, the oversight report.
Just before you move to the next item, I do think that...
Honorable Menia, what are you talking on?
Chair, I just want to make an important...
Honorable Menia, what are you talking on?
I'm talking
Can we still start respecting each other and respecting procedures? I think you've been given enough time. You remember, we were supposed to discuss this for 30 minutes. We're on for more than 1 hour now. I don't know what else would you want. And I'm giving you guidance. You still want to defy that. Honorable member. Honorable members, can we go to the next item on the agenda? Honorable JJ.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the recommendations, you didn't give direction on how to... Can I continue?
No. We said that we have circulated the report since February.
Mm-hmm.
And then nothing came to us to say that we want to amend this or not amend this, we want to add this. But if you have something to add now, you can do that.
Okay. Maybe I'm mixing these two things. Because we once had a joint over, but in any way it will apply, because in terms of facilities, I remember we talked about the defense itself having, what did we call them, works cops, or what did we call it?
Regiment,
something of that nature. And I don't see it in here because of the problem between public works, and we strongly recommend that the defense have their, I mean, be independent when it comes to that. That is the only thing that I realize it's not, it should have been under recommendations on facilities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Make, Honorable Sao, Honorable Nambo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you. I remember quickly, I think Honorable Nambo had mentioned when we returned from that trip at our meeting, and that's why I find it not strange that it's not included, is the armed corps facilities that were not protected by the defense. And the issue was raised, and I think we made a point in the meeting, and I think that should be incorporated as well in the report. That was specifically raised by our members.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Nambo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Isao, for putting my name on record that I raised this important matter. But the other issue that we have raised is that in some of the engagement with the personnel, the opposition parties, they never wanted to be part and parcel of those meetings. And I said I would raise it in the committee, their participation, because it was like the ANC is becoming the shop steward of soldiers, because they were afraid to listen to certain grievances by our men and women in uniform. So that should be noted, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Mlambo. Honorable Mke.
Yeah, just an addition, Chairperson. I don't know how that should be included in the report, but the question that seemingly it's a waste of taxpayers' monies for the opposition to go to these bases and then from there stage walkouts when we are supposed to be talking to the soldiers, meaning that they only went there on a tour because they didn't do their job and they wasted taxpayers' money. I think it must be included in there because that is exactly what they did. And that is the waste of taxpayers' monies. And I don't think we need an explanation because we were all there.
Honorable Chair, I think we take exception and put that on record. First and foremost, Honorable Chair, we were not briefed on the whole procedure of engagement. We attended all parts of the program. In fact, in Durban, we attended the grievance issue when it was raised, and everybody was present. We objected when senior SMS members were asked to go out and only the soldiers, because we were not briefed about it. If there was any issue raised, it would be raised in the presence of everybody. So we made our point very clear to Honorable Chair, and we excused ourselves. We, of course, attended all other parts of the program and did our job as it's supposed to be done. Thank you very much.
So you want us to note your objection?
Oh, of course, if it's included in the report, I take exception.
Honorable
Mwambo. Well, thanks, Chairman. I also would like to, I'm not too sure whether it would be an objection because I was not given the. I actually had apologized on this because the oversight actually, you know, coincided with the oversight of another committee in which I sat.
You say the opposition cannot be painted to the same brush.
No, that would be grossly unfair because if I was there, I would certainly have participated in those.
Honorable Dalias.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I hope I haven't seen, and that's my name, because it's long that I've read the report. The question about funds, I don't even know what rank he is. The pilot who told us, because of Parliament in our cases, that they will not sit there and listen to the nonsense that the service members, what they were giving us at their previous. I did took offense to that. Hence, if you remember very well, the Comrade Chair, we had to remind you that in terms of the law, that was the reason why we were there, because civil oversight and defense. I don't remember seeing that part in the report. Because that very member, by the way, Chair, the pilot who flew to see his wife with the gasoline, the plane agent of the department to see his wife. I don't know what is done about that, by the way.
The honorable member. Can we adopt the report with the amendment? You move? Second up?
No, not objection. And also the fact that we, as a committee, we promise to go back to the basis and deal with these grievances. By the way, Chair, I hope it's noted. Then I will move, Chair, with those amendments.
So you move. You still want to amend or you object, Honorable Market?
No, I don't object. I remember there are some... I just want to find out. I see it responds within 1 month. Responds within 1 month. And I don't doubt 1 month is...
No. It's good. Not impossible. We haven't adopted the report.
The one month is good enough. But I remember there are in some areas where we said these things must happen immediately. For instance, in Langeban, those people whose babies didn't have transport to go to school or to go to health facilities, we said that must be dealt with immediate effect. I thought you were referring to whether adopted or not adopted. I remember there were some...
Because you made your point.
Yeah, there were those areas that we identified.
So you want them to be accepted.
That's correct. Let us be...
You made your point.
Thank you. Right.
Honorable Isao has already moved for the adoption.
No.
My guess I got the... Thank you, Honorable Member. It's fine. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go to the next one.
I want to call the subject of the name, please. I want to call the subject of the name, please.